Hello, Buffer fans and friends and Buffer countrymen and countrywomen. Welcome back. Lend us your ears and hit subscribe, will ya? It really makes a big difference. And if you are feeling even more generous with your time, and we know that you're busy, if you hit subscribe and then take like 2 to 5 minutes, write a review, rate the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and then share it with your friends. We would really appreciate that so that you can tell everybody, hey, I'm down with the Buffer and I listen every single week. So welcome to the show. We're glad to be with you as we are sitting here almost wrapping up another month, the month of September. My name is Tony Tone.
And I'm Joel Krausar.
So, pal, there's a lot going on.
Is it 2027 yet?
What's that?
I feel like we've had 6 years pass by in the last 2 weeks. I'm just so tired. Why is life so crazy right now?
It is definitely very busy. I think this will go down as one of the most interesting months and the fastest months that I've had, just professionally, personally. It's been packed full of events and just things that have happened. And I just wonder if that's going to kind of set the stage for an October. Basically, are we going to be, you know, we'll blink and we'll be sitting here talking about starting a new year. I don't want it to go that fast because where we're at in Iowa, that means winter is coming.
And that means my 40th birthday is in December. So I'm going to feel old real fast. We'll have to do something for my 40th birthday.
Wait, did you say it's in December?
It sure is.
Holy moly. And see, this is the kind of thing, like, as we're sitting here right now, there's nothing like a surprise planned because we're in the middle of a global pandemic. But I could also say that and you could either believe me or not believe me. It could be a misdirection.
Well, I believe you because, like, how do I say this? My wife loves me very much. My wife does not love parties very much. So I do too, but I'm getting more and more less. I just want a few of the people that matter to be there. Like, even the thought of just having a night of rip roaring consumption of alcohol just doesn't have any appeal to me anymore. Like, it's like, nope,
I would go right now if you wanted to. I would go.
Well, when I was 38, like you were, I would too. But yeah. It's amazing what these last 2 years have been like. I just don't want to. Like, it's just, I just want to sleep.
Massive birthday parties in my life, like with a couple hundred people, and that's not a brag. I don't know a couple hundred people. But when I was on the radio a long time ago, we had what was lovingly known as Tony Tone's birthday bash, which sounds really annoying.
Well, you were really annoying. You were Morning Zoo top 100 radio. It was inherently annoying. Thankfully, you and your co-host weren't actually annoying people. You just had to play them on the air.
It was just like, I mean, one of those birthdays, it was like the 24th, 5th, or 6th. It's kind of like, you know, the party started and then I woke up in bed. So I don't know if I necessarily
at least
need
it was your own bed.
That's right. But yeah, no, you're right. I think the thing that nobody tells you is you're getting older. And then even if you don't have kids, I have to assume it happens. Like right now it's 9:26 Central time. And I feel like I could sleep in any moment. And then with us, like, our house is usually quiet. Kids are usually asleep by like 8:30 at the latest. And then I'm always like, oh, I've got time. I'm going to watch this. I'm going to listen to this podcast. And then it's like 9 o'clock and I'm like, I am 100 years old. Everything hurts and I'm dying and I need to sleep. Like, I feel like I have to hibernate every night. And then I'm the guy that's now waking up before his alarm, which is super annoying.
I think it's why to pivot kind of into this week's battle. These types of shows that we're going to talk about today are why I think they're so popular, at least for me, is because I don't have to sit down for 2 hours to watch it. It's not even like the prestige TV, like on an HBO where it's 52 minutes.
Yeah.
Like these are quick 27 minute episodes on these two shows that we're going to discuss today. And I love it. I think that's one of the biggest reasons why they've had the traction that they've had. Not only are they brilliantly acted, brilliantly written, but the runtime is really conducive to sitting down with your loved one and like your wife or your significant other and watching it and just watching it together in 27 minutes. You're like, okay, we're good. Let's go to bed.
You're absolutely right. This week's buffer battle, as Joel was setting it up, is Ted Lasso on Apple Plus versus Only Murderers in the Building on Hulu. And it's super weird saying that we're talking about pieces of content that are on Apple Plus and Hulu. We live in an age where there's, I don't even know how many streaming outlets and so much good content. Joel's going to speak for Ted Lasso, and that show is on, you know, fresh off of a very successful appearance at the Emmys. So that helps them a lot. And Only Murderers in the Building just concluded episode 6. They've got 4 left. And I don't know what's not to love about Steve Martin Short. And the biggest surprise, not that she's not a good actress or that talented, but I just didn't know Selena Gomez is holding her own and she's very likable. So I'm going to defer to you with Ted Lasso because they just had a great weekend.
Sure.
And the news that came out of SNL is also very, very good.
Yeah, we are Sudeikis heads. The two of us are. We Are the Millers is an underrated, hysterical comedy. I can't play Pictionary with my family without thinking of We Are the Millers. Horrible Bosses, also great movies. Underrated Sudeikis performance and movie altogether is the ensemble performance of A Good Old-Fashioned Orgy, which is a very good movie. Very, very good movie. And Sudeikis kind of leans into that and really runs that movie.
Yes.
Will Forte, so good in that
absolutely
film.
Absolutely.
Also, Will Sudeikis shows up in The Last Man on Earth in like season 2, and there is an amazing karaoke scene of Jason Sudeikis and Will Forte singing Falling Slowly from the movie Once, and it can't be. It's one of those great YouTube clips to go out and find. Ted Lasso. I was late to the Lasso train, largely because I was just late to the Apple Plus train, and I kind of waited until it became available on a 12-month free trial. I ended up talking my cell phone provider into hooking us up with that.
It's the best.
And so I'm cheap, but it's worth every penny if you're paying for this, and I'm going to continue to pay for it, I think, as long as this show is going. I've never had a show make me laugh and cry in almost every single episode like this show does. And I know that there's all sorts of narrative about the pandemic. It's what we needed because of all the positivity. But Tony, I know that I've talked about it before. Coaching is my absolute life's passion. I started out as a graduate assistant football coach at a very good, nationally ranked, in fact, they've won 3 national championships in the last 4 years, football program at Morningside University. We were 1 game away from the national championship game. I love coaching. It's what I wanted to be when I grew up. Some things went a different route professionally, and I do it now as a hobby, and I'm a kids coach. But it's to have this person and have a show that absolutely just focuses on positivity and how to overcome adversity, and to use this vehicle of a on the cusp of relegation and relegated soccer club in the English Premier League is just brilliant, because it's a premise enough that a lot of Americans are familiar with. And a lot of people around the world are familiar with, but unless you're a true follower and a true fan, you're not going to sit there and nitpick every aspect of the sport side of it, which makes it a really good canvas for this small, you know, broken group of people that are all trying to coexist. The whole be a goldfish speech from the very first season is impeccable. And season 2, what I'm really liking so much about season 2 is they're focusing a little bit more on the actual just mental health of the individuals and the organizational psychology of the individuals. And these last few episodes, they've almost been a little bit more of a flex of, okay, we know what we are from season one, and now we're going to do these like episodic, almost odyssey stories in one 27-minute episode of each of these different characters. So we've had one with Nate, the soft-spoken, you know, assistant who actually knows football, soccer, as we Americans say. And then this last episode was this weird journey for Coach Beard that was just weird. It was really, it was almost like a Paul Thomas Anderson kind of aesthetic. And Bill Lawrence is probably a name that maybe people who, unless they follow TV really closely, it's not tip of the tongue. I think of Bill Lawrence, but you know, you think about the shows that he's created, Scrubs, you know, that's the one that kind of jumps out to me the most. But Scrubs, wasn't he the one? I'm trying to think, I'm blanking now. I had them all written down, and I left the paper upstairs. But Bill Lawrence and Jason Sudeikis.
I think that's right. I mean, and I'm not the guy that's seen every episode of Scrubs.
Love Scrubs. Scrubs is one of my top five shows of all time.
And I don't know enough to say, like, Ted Lasso feels like Scrubs, but part of me wants to say, like, it kind of looks like it, or maybe it's the flow, or if it's the banter, or the, like,
I think the thing about the where I make the comparison is how the characters all seem to love each other in some way, shape, or form. And that's the thing that you got from Scrubs, even though they didn't always get along. And I don't mean like romantic love. I just mean they all seemed to care about the emotional well-being of each other. Cougar Town, that's the other one that is the Bill Lawrence
that makes sense.
Was shockingly successful. Yeah. But it's like, yeah, these guys just understand how to run a show. And Ted Lasso finds characters, and then you have a character that to me is my favorite character that I've seen on screen in the last 10 years, and that is Roy Kent. That character, the surly British soccer player who hates everybody but loves everybody at the same time, like, and just, he's like this constant through line of unwavering commitment to values and the right way to do things, but he says the F word every other sentence. Like, he's just he's got this magnificent loving relationship with his niece who he's basically helping raise.
Yeah.
And you know, he's Juno Temple is so good in this show. Hannah Waddington,
unreal.
She just won an Emmy. And it's just, it's a cast that they didn't say, okay, let's go out and find a couple huge names to throw in this. Let's go find the right people that will work in these roles. And that's what they've done, and that's what they've made. And I think Sudeikis might be working through some of the stuff that may be going on in his world a little bit through this character. I think that that's fair to say. I mean, I don't think it's too far of a stretch to say he just recently has gone through a major divorce or separation with the mother of his children, and now that's what this character Ted Lasso has gone through in the first. But you don't feel sad for him, you just feel him feel. And I think that that's the coolest thing about this show, is you feel these characters feel, and you don't feel sick to your stomach like some dramas will do, or even comedies will do. It's like you just can't wait to see these characters every week. And I think not releasing them in a binge format and releasing them week by week really has benefited this show.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, similar experience, having upgraded my phone around this time last year, was surprised when all of a sudden, boom, Apple Plus. So if anything, I'm like, 2 or 3 weeks away from having to start to pay for Apple Plus, which I will, because Ted Lasso season one was so good. This is a buffer battle where I don't really have a lot to nitpick. I don't even think I can nitpick.
I think
anything.
These are two of the better shows that have come out in the last 18 months.
Definitely. And it's also hard because I am a Jason Sudeikis fan. I love that, like, he's talked about his past and how he started, you know, comedy with Comedy Sports, which is something that I did for a year.
Both of us did. Both of us
started. Such a good improv. Like, he's just so good at improv, and he's so funny, and he's so damn likable.
It helps when George Wentz, your uncle.
Right. Definitely doesn't hurt.
I mean, I'm not saying that has anything to do with his career, but when you sure. can, when you can go to a casting agent and say, hey, Uncle George told me about you. Because I know that that happened. I was reading an article where he didn't rely on it, but when George sure. found out he was trying to do it, I mean, he made some phone calls like any good uncle would do.
Listen, sometimes nepotism is okay, right?
Well, you got to earn it once you get there, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, if you can get a door open, so be it.
Just do the running man right through it. When they open that door, you just do the running man right through it. Which Ted Lasso does the running man in that first episode.
I don't even like soccer. I mean, I don't dislike soccer, but you know what I mean? Like, I don't watch soccer. I've been to like one Chicago Fire game having grown up there. And but it doesn't even matter, like, if you're a sports fan or not, because again, this is about characters, it's about relationships, it's about people going through things. But is there a more likable lead actor in a show? You know, and I think the origin of this Ted Lasso character that was created to promote like the World Cup as a fictional character that turned into a series that just cleaned house at the Emmys. I love that. That's the best. That these guys were able to be like, hey, what if we had this like American fish out of water that was a coach and he had a mustache and he was charming. And then it turns into a series that's going to get like, assumingly, like a third and fourth season. I'm going to be curious, Joel, to see, because this show is so good. I wonder, like, Apple Plus obviously isn't letting go and they're going to pay more, just like with the morning show and that second season. But you have to assume the networks are just like, what can we do to get, you know, it's not going to be in syndication anytime soon, but you know what I mean? Like,
I don't think they can. I would
be chomping at the bit to get this into a wider distribution. Not that it maybe even needs it.
I don't think anyone's going to be able to do it, because I think what Apple's going to do is they're going to say, listen, we've got it. So if people want it, they have to come to us. And if anything, it's going to raise Apple's level and have to find more. What I think it's going to be is they're going to say, here, Bill, what's your next pitch? What's your next show?
Yeah.
So, because a guy like Bill Lawrence has five or six things ready to go, probably.
Definitely. Yes. And I think if you have that in the pipeline, yeah. And of course, for like a Bill Lawrence, I mean, and a Sudeikis, it is just another blank check.
I hope and I pray that Sudeikis doesn't take like the cash grab and go for, you know, the Ted Lasso movie. I don't think this is the kind of character that doesn't need to be in a movie. And I think what we've learned from the like Masters of None, some of these shows, that's a bad example, but some of these shows, you don't need seven seasons, eight seasons to be prestigious anymore, to be elite.
You could get to four or five and
it'll run its course, and that's fine.
And I don't see Jason Sudeikis, and again, I don't know the guy.
This is almost like a Silicon Valley. A little bit.
Yeah. When you think about my perception of Jason Sudeikis is that he's not going to keep doing a show just for the paycheck if he doesn't feel like it's as good as it was in its first or second or third season, right? I mean, I think you let it run its course, and then he's going to continue to just be as busy as possible. I just want to comment. I feel like if I'm Jason Sudeikis and I'm with Olivia Wilde, and I think they have two kids, and then whatever happens in that relationship, and then she starts dating Harry Styles. Oh my God.
Well, it is what it is. But
I would be like, damn it. Like, how do you clap back?
And
I get the celebrity power couple thing, but man, I just feel like, and I don't know if this is true, and there's certainly examples of celebrity couples that have been together forever, but what about like what's a good example? This maybe isn't a good example. Like, who is Hugh Jackman married to? Like a normal person, yeah. Right?
Matt, like, Damon. Matt Damon's married, yeah, to a teacher that he met. Yeah. Like
I, you know, I don't know. I just feel like, but you have to think Sudeikis was like, damn, Harry Styles, really? Like,
how much, okay, younger than her is he?
Like, he's, I mean, I 24? Think he's still in his 20s.
25?
I mean, she is what?
He does a banging
cover. She's 37.
Cover
of, she's 37.
He does a banging cover of Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel. Like,
he is 27, so 10 years.
So
I just don't think I want him. And this is not an anti-Harry Styles podcast. I don't know if I want a 27-year-old around my kids. Like, you know, you're kind of like still an idiot when you're 27 and like, listen, mom is dating this guy and like he doesn't know how to parent. And it's that whole thing where he's probably just like, I don't know, maybe he's fine.
I don't know either one of us are qualified to, I mean, there's a few more resources available in this situation than, I mean, it's not like the guy just showing up in this Ford Ranger truck with, right, one seatbelt that works,
right,
you know, and by the way,
but also like Harry's on tour and are we meant to assume that like every 19 and up year old girl that are at those shows, he's just like, no, I'm dating Olivia Wilde, she's 37 and has two kids, leave me alone. I don't know. I'm trying not to go off into the woods.
Speaking on things that I have no ability to really comment on.
But it just seems like
how this show handles the divorce and the, you know, the kid. You know, he tries to FaceTime with this kid, and there's the episode in the first season where they come, and that was kind of the final straw. Like, he clearly knew that it was over when that trip happened, but it's like, they all kind of moved on. And I like that there's romance involved in this show, but it's not Love Triangle City. It's not, yes, it's not the complete foundation of the show. The show is about this little engine that could of a sports organization where they realize that in order to be successful, we have to do things a different way. And in her, mm-hmm, attempt to go all major league and hire this American football coach to run this British soccer team and tank her husband's ex-husband's beloved football club, she ends up hiring perhaps one of the most charismatic Bill Belichickian like, right, organizational psychology guru that is just be a goldfish. Just,
you just said charming and Belichick in the same breath.
I've had the opportunity to be at coaching conferences that Bill Belichick has spoken at. When he's around football people, that dude is charismatic and charming as hell. Like, he is a very, very, when he's talking about football, he's very interesting to hear and charismatic to hear talk. That's just,
wow.
At the American Football Coaches Association in 2006, I got to hear him speak. And it was seriously like, I've never seen a room of, you know, pretty smart individuals just feel so dumb listening to this guy talk. And it wasn't like he wasn't trying to. He just, you could just tell that his macro analysis ability was at a different level.
That's so awesome. All right. So Ted Lasso on Apple Plus season 2, and they just cleaned house at the Emmys. I'm going to go Only Murderers in the Building, which is still in its first season on Hulu. You had me at Steve Martin, Martin Short, Selena Gomez. And I love that I started to see TikToks with Selena Gomez and Martin Short and Steve Martin. And I had no idea what was going on. I was like, why are Selena Gomez, Martin Short and Steve Martin hanging out? What is happening? Like, this just seems like such an odd pairing. And it was for Only Murderers in the Building. And the best part of this show, I think, is the plot, which Steve Martin, Martin Short, Selena Gomez's characters live in the same building. There's a death in the building. They all of a sudden find themselves at a restaurant because there was like know, they had to evacuate the building, and they have the same obsession with a true crime podcast, which, by the way, is hosted by Tina Fey on the show. So this is like, there's heavy hitter after heavy hitter. So they decide, once they learn a little bit more about this Tim Kono, what happened to him, who done it, was it a suicide or was it a murder? Steve Martin's character is like a former, like, NCIS star with catchphrases.
It was more like Columbo, wasn't he? Like, wasn't it? He was more like a Columbo or a who is the coroner guy? What was that? Quincy. Like, I almost feel like he's more
so one of, good.
That's what I envisioned. 1980s
detective drama before drifting into obscurity is how it reads. Charles Hayden Savage is his character. Martin Short is Oliver Putnam, a struggling Broadway director. And I would watch Martin Short play any character. It doesn't matter. He's so phenomenal. And then Selena Gomez's character's name is Mabel Mora. So long story short, 6 episodes in, they're building the podcast. They're learning more about their friend Mabel and her alleged relationship with Tim Kono, which is the name of the character who passed away. This show is so good. It is like Ted Lasso in that it is 25 to 27 minutes long. You're drawn in immediately. You know and like a lot of these folks. The Selena Gomez chemistry with these two legends works. I didn't know that Tina Fey was going to be in this. I didn't know that Nathan Lane was going to be playing Teddy Dumas, who is a resident in this building. And he turns into being a sponsor on the podcast. And the episode that just rolled out this last Monday was called To Serve and Protect. And it really kind of delved into what you thought was just kind of like a throwaway side character, Detective Williams, played by Divine Joy Randolph. But way more depth to that character. And then we're getting closer and closer, Joel, to figuring out who done it.
So the last... The last episode,
there was 10 episodes. I'm so excited that there are 4 more, though. I'm really, really happy.
The last episode that I've seen is the Sting episode. I just haven't been able to get back to it, but just Sting showing up in it was a funny turn. It's almost like they do, like COVID roulette, where they're like, who is available, who is around, and Sting was available and around.
I love that. Well, I don't know if it was Tina Fey that told them, like, you surprise people with a turkey. You cook them a turkey and then they'll let you into their house. They show up to Sting's door. And it's just like, again, Steve Martin and Martin Short, they've done stage shows. They're just it. I don't know if it gets any better than those
seminal,
two.
Seminal comedic influence.
It's...
Dressed up as Ed Grimley for Halloween one year. I must say, like, that's my mom's favorite Saturday Night Live character is Ed Grimley with the Pat Sajak obsession. And Steve Martin, like, I didn't know that he wasn't ever an official cast member of Saturday Night Live. He just was always there. Yeah, well, I did later, but I think when I was renting the Saturday Night Live videos from the library as a kid, and you know, the two wild and crazy guys would show up, I didn't know. But the thing is the movie VHS tape that we recorded off of TV that I watched probably the most as a kid is Three Amigos. Like, I watched Three Amigos. My friend Billy and I, in a high school football game or middle school football game, got a flag thrown on us because we did the Three Amigos salute to each other after a touchdown.
That's like, so great.
And it was just one of those things where that movie was so important. And I love Martin Short and Steve Martin largely because of how comedically brilliant they are, but how musical they are too. Steve Martin playing the concertina as the background music. There is no doubt in my mind that he's like, oh, this would be cool. I'm going to learn how to play this for this show. Like, I think he's probably just that good that he can teach himself any instrument that he needs to learn how to play. Because if you can play the banjo, you can pretty much play anything.
Yeah, it's really, really good. If you haven't seen it, Hulu, And what I like about this with Only Murders in the Building is they are making you wait. And every Monday, they're giving you a new episode. And it's kind of a throwback. I mean, we've certainly had that recently with some of the HBOs.
Well, I think the HBO proved it still works. So now the other yeah. streamers aren't afraid to do it anymore.
Yeah. And it's really nice to have that to look forward to. And I'm excited. Like I said, there's four more episodes left. So 10 in total. You have plenty of time to jump in with both feet. And I know that they've gotten picked up for a second season, so that's very exciting. You know, again,
does this that is change one of those how you finish season one on a show like this? Do you I think? Can't.
So they concluded filming in April. I don't think they've gone back to do any reshoots. So I'm going to say that this probably buttons up with a surprise. Your three main characters are intact, and because it's done so well with nearly 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, they're like, we need to do this again.
The other person who I was so happy to see when I saw the credits was Amy Ryan. Amy Ryan, who kind of played, from the episodes I've seen, she is kind of Steve Martin's love interest in this. And Amy Ryan, if you don't know that name, but you've watched The Office, she's Holly, who ends up being Michael Scott's betrothed, but at the end of The Office. That's Michael Scott's one true love is Holly Flax from Nashua. And Amy Ryan is this really amazing character actress who can has been in so many big, heavy, dramatic things, but then she's like, I kind of wanted to do The Office, so they let her do The Office, and it was supposed to be a walk-on role, and then she just proved that she can hang with these brilliant comedic improvisers, and now she's showing her medal again with two of the best, Steve Martin and Martin Short. Yeah. And when you look at those two, they've done so much together. Mm-hmm. Like it's hard to remember how much they've done, but even going back to, you know, the Father of the Bride movies with Frank Bonk and Martin Short in those, like they are, I think you think of people who play best friends on TV or kind of when they go on a talk show, I really think these two guys might be actual best friends in actual life.
Yeah, you'd have to assume. I mean, their chemistry is unbelievable, and they're so damn quick, and I just love that. I would talk about something to nerd out to on a podcast. Get them off of a talk show, give them an hour and a half, and just go. And I know that they've done it, but I'm saying just let them go.
That like stage just, show that they did for Netflix a couple of years ago.
So brilliant.
I can watch that over and over and over again. I have. Yeah. I know every joke that's coming, but it's so well crafted and so well written. And the fact that Martin Short can sing and dance and do all the things, and Steve Martin can sit there with his banjo and pick, like, in that stage show environment, they really, it's sad to say that they're old school, but they're these old school variety performers who really can sit and they can probably debate political policy with a president just as well as they can maybe, you know, go with the Workaholics guys and riff and do, you know, gutter, lowest common denominator humor. Like, absolutely. I don't think there's a single environment that Steve Martin and Martin Short can't thrive in.
No.
But now they don't have to be in an uncomfortable environment because they can just pick and choose whatever they want to do.
You are 100% right. And that's what makes this so tough. I mean, I think.
And you mentioned Selena Gomez. When I saw her name in the credits, I was like, what the hell? How is this going to work? But then and I texted this to you when you turned me on to this show. I said, but you know what? If those two are going to pick her, they're going to be willing to work with her. I trust them. I just said, I trust them. They aren't going to do something with someone that can't hang at the level that they want to hang.
It is an interesting. It's a very big surprise.
And she's good. She's doing really good.
Yeah. I have no complaints with her. I wasn't sure. I was skeptical at first, I'll be honest, but I think it was like, I think I was maybe 10 minutes into the first episode and I like stopped the episode, grabbed the image of the cast with the title and pushed it out on my social media. It was like, I can just tell this, you know, a show is good when you can go 10 minutes in and go, holy cow, I need to tell everybody about this. It was like Derek Delgadio right. all over again. Like, I was like, oh, this is going to be something different and great. But I just don't know in the buffer battle.
She doesn't have to do much. I think that's the thing, is it's almost like, I think of a guy like Chuck Knoblauch on some of those great Yankee teams at second base. He didn't have to hit 20 home runs. He didn't have to steal 42 bases. He didn't have to bat 380. What Chuck Knoblauch needed to do is play second base error-free, which he, at the end of his career, couldn't do because he got the yips. But he just had to get on base. He batted second. He had to get on base. That's all he had to do. And that's all she has to do in this. She is worthy of it, but she doesn't have to be this over-the-top Disney star like she's had to be in the past. She just has to live in that moment.
That's right.
And be there and be supportive and be almost the down pressure, the low pressure, while the high pressure system that is Martin Short comes onto the screen. And then Steve Martin's just kind of that equilibrium force that keeps it all together. It's really, when you think about it, it's like, yeah, this is a no-brainer. This is smart. They should have, of course this works.
What this is going to come down to is biscuits or hummus. And I don't know if Martin Short's character's
biscuits
affinity.
With the boss is a pretty brilliant plot.
And the fact that we learn at the end that Ted Lasso season one is making the biscuits is such a great.
Well, you could see that the whole time that he was making the biscuits. If that was a plot twist to you, man, the Sixth Sense blew your mind.
It was a nice thing for me to discover because I thought, wow, this dude is really, he's got it all figured out. Like, you know,
I was listening to a podcast with Bill Lawrence, and they were talking about biscuits with the boss, and he said it was completely a writing device that Jason thought up of this is the reason for Jason to go into her office every day at the beginning of every episode and set up why the owner of this team should be interacting with the coach. Because in a normal sports situation, that's right. just not the case. And to have that one little nugget, this little super endearing thing, but really it's just this nifty little plot mechanism to have it go. Like those are the sort of things that make me geek out. I'm like, man, I now know that. So if I ever do try to write something, I know that things like that are smart, and that'll help you drive your plot forward.
Well, I think in this week's buffer battle, because they just cleaned up at the Emmys, Ted Lasso needs to advance. Having said that, I do anticipate the remaining four episodes of Only Murderers in the Building to be very, very, very good. And
I was prepared to fight for Ted Lasso because I think Only Murderers in the Building isn't far off. I think they could be in the next Emmy cycle as doing really well.
Sure.
But I think here is going to be why I think Ted Lasso should win. Because I think 15 years from now, you're going to buy a new edition of Trivial Pursuit. And in the pink entertainment category, you're going to find questions about Ted Lasso as one of those.
Yes.
Because I think it has saturated the popular culture worldwide enough that it's going to end up in a Trivial Pursuit game someday.
Definitely. Yes, I agree 100%. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to compare Selena Gomez to Ron Carcavice, another baseball player who just had to do his job. And you're only going to get those type of analogies
heard of Ron Carcavice
buffer. Hang tight. And Ron Carcavice, if you're out there, miss you, boo.
And Dan Gleason will only listen to this podcast.
We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to the buffer. Rate, review, subscribe, interact, Facebook, Twitter with the buffer. We love when you do it. Tell your friends. And we'll continue cranking out new episodes each week. I am admittedly getting more tired as this goes on because I'm so old. I'm sitting here thinking like I should have got myself like a diet beverage, but then I thought I don't want to get a caffeine high.
I was gonna say, are you? I'm at the age where I can't. Flash. I can't have caffeine after like 8 p.m. or I'm up till 1 o'clock.
I would be up till one and I would poop my pants. Everybody, I just can't do it.
It's but, an aspartame I wanna just, dump.
Too much aspartame. Listen, there's a lot of content coming out and I'm just going to rapid fire a couple of big things in the next couple of weeks. And just give me, Joel, your yay or nay, because we do want to get into our couple our weekly features with the guilty pleasures, buffer confessions, and then some parenting and funny moments in dress socks and Crocs. We didn't have that last week with the Norm MacDonald show. Okay, so quick hitters content out this week, September 24th. Dear Evan Hansen.
Yes. And here's the thing.
I'm a nay.
I know you are.
The reviews have been bad.
I have to talk about this because I know you've been so happy to send me about how all the bad reviews are for mm-hmm. it. And I just think movies as musical or musicals as movies have a lot of fundamental flaws in that, except for like something like a West Side Story or a Music Man, where I think that they were initially conceived as that movie script. Music Man wasn't, but it the story lends itself more to that. Modern musicals are usually thought of so outside of the box as how they're staged and where they exist on the stage. Like there's minimal set pieces, there's minimal, it's light work. It's like if you go to the set of Dear Evan Hansen, it's primarily a dark stage where there's a lot of lights. They put on some small set pieces that are almost like play type set pieces, and it's more about the music and these phenomenal performances of these vocalists. You can, when you have 1,000 people in a theater absorbing that experience, it is one of the most moving artistic experiences that you can have. Those kind of things are very hard to translate to the screen, and honestly the musical people, and I'm one of them, are kind of jerks about how critical they are of these musicals as they move into the screen. And the movie people, a lot of movie people don't like musicals and they're looking for every reason for them to suck. And Cats did everyone a disservice because Cats is a bad musical that was an even worse movie. I think Dear Evan Hansen's worth watching simply because any chance you get to have Ben Platt singing that score is a victory. Now, I don't know how Amy Adams is going to hold up. I don't know how some of these other people are going to hold up. Sometimes I wish they would just do what they did with Hamilton and they would just mass release a recorded version of the stage musical with something like this instead of trying to adapt it for the screen. I think that's a better thing.
A simple yay would have sufficed.
No, I wanted to defend musicals.
Jesus Christ.
I told you I was going to defend musicals.
It's a musical with like a 40-year-old playing
He's
a high school
27
kid.
Playing I'm out. A 17-year-old.
I'm out. He looks older than I do. I can't take him seriously. I broke my arm and he signed my cast and now he's dead.
Do you
and
know
that's
the
all
plot?
I need to know.
Do you
I don't
know
want to know the plot. A simple yay would have suffice. Not going to see it. Hate. I'm your man. I don't know what it is, so I'm going to say I don't have an opinion on that.
Let's just say the original title is Ich bin dein Mensch.
Yes. So Apache Junction is also out this week. Again, I'm not sure what that is. Next week, October 1st, I'm cautiously optimistic. I will watch The Many Saints of Newark, a Soprano story on HBO Max and in theaters. Again, I'm trying to not read a lot of reviews from what I've heard and
a
read.
A simple yay would suffice.
A very modest yay. Also next week, Venom, Let There Be Carnage.
Trailers have terrified my children for the last 3 weeks. I have kids who are watching a college football game and they're bailing because this commercial has come on and they're scared of Venom. And my oldest son he's got an imagination on him. His favorite player is George Kittle. George Kittle's in one of the commercials for Venom promoting it. And he's like conflicted because he wants to see George Kittle, but he doesn't want to see Venom.
Yeah, it's supposed to be pretty short, like just over an hour and a half. And there's apparently some incredible post-credit scene that's already been leaked on TikTok, maybe the Sinister Six. I don't know, but
I don't know what that is.
Maybe on that. Yeah. Adam's Family 2 is in the wheelhouse for what we have with young kids.
Yep.
It would be a no-brainer popcorn movie. The first one I didn't love, so I'm gonna go.
I didn't have to see it. My in-laws took my kids to see it, so maybe they'll come again.
I'm kind of a meh. Like, I don't know if they needed to do this. It's a cash grab.
I'm more of a Hotel Transylvania guy myself.
How about in the next one? It's not even Adam Sandler doing the voice. Do you know that? It's somebody else.
I didn't know. That's fine.
There's another Hotel Transylvania coming out. I learned that on TikTok, and I'm only 38. October 8th. No Time to Die, the long-awaited James Bond movie. I think everybody is a yay. You have to be. There's also just some random other things coming out that week called Lamb. Then there's Mass, South of Heaven, Pokemon, the movie, The Secrets of the Jungle, and The Rescue. So just look those up if you need to, because I don't know what they are either. And then real quick, October 15th, another big, 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 scary movie.
So Jamie Lee Curtis is your back. Favorite kind of movie and my favorite kind of movie in that same weekend.
Isn't that crazy? So Halloween Kills in theaters and on Peacock the same day, which is very interesting. It's supposed to be the most violent out of these David Gordon Green, and if I said his name wrong, whatever, and Kenny Powers movies, Halloween movies.
Danny McBride.
And I think it's David Gordon Green. I've heard Halloween Kills has something like over 30 violent deaths.
And it's Blumhouse, right? It's two still.
I think Blumhouse is in there too. And then Halloween Ends will be so next year.
So they're making a third. Okay. It's not.
So you know that Michael Myers will survive.
I and hate then those I'll, movies, just, I'll see it for the show.
It'll be nutty.
But what I
and
then love last but not Scott. Least
The Last Duel, which looks very, very good.
Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Ridley Scott, the girl from Free Guy, trying to remember her name.
Awesome. She's so good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on board. I will see anything Ridley Scott makes. He is my favorite person directing movies of all time.
Didn't Matt and Ben write it, or did they produce it?
I think they wrote it.
Wow.
So have they done that before? I can't remember.
Yeah, just a couple of times.
No, I think this is the first one they've written together since Good Will. I think they.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I think they haven't written together since Good Will Hunting.
Wow. Well, I'm sure it looks really, really good. Okay, so we're gonna kind of get into these little features for you before we get out of here. We'll start with the guilty pleasures, the things that you're watching that normally you may not want to admit at work or to your friends. You know how this comes up. People will say, what'd you do this weekend? And you might not want to be the person that leads with, I watched this on insert streaming device. But sometimes it's something fun or that you think is fun. And then you bring it up and somebody else is like, I watched that too. And that can be also very fulfilling, right?
Yeah. And for me, I actually had this happen this week. They're like, what did you watch this weekend? I was like, well, I started the show a couple weeks ago and it just really drew me in. And they're like, what is it? And so I told them what it was. And they're like, really? You like that show? And it was on HBO, HBO Max. And that is another one that had a really successful Emmys. Hacks. I don't know if you've seen that show yet.
I've heard of it.
It's the mom from Mayor of Easttown. I can't remember her name.
She's so good.
What's her name? God, I'm totally drawing a blank.
She has a name.
I should have pulled this up. This is live podcasting, everybody.
Did she win? Did she win an Emmy, that actress?
I think so.
Whose name was Jean Smart?
Yes,
she did win an Emmy, didn't she?
What else was she on, like Designing Women, or was she on one of those? Oh, God,
what are you going to ask me, 30 questions about her? I don't know. I just got you her name.
Yes, Jean Smart.
I don't know what to say.
So Jean Smart kind of plays this, you know, old, almost Joan Rivers type comedian character. And then there's another young comedic writer who's kind of just in a shame spiral and self-sabotage spiral that her agent sets her up with a writing gig, kind of a la like Funny People, like what Seth Rogen does for Adam Sandler, kind of this young up-and-coming writer played by Hannah Einbinder, who is Lorraine Newman's daughter. So if you remember her from Saturday Night Live.
Yep.
And she's freaking awesome in this. She's just this weird, very 20s girl who doesn't do anything right, but is also really kind of insightful. And it's kind of the gap between this old school Vegas comedy and then the new school. We just tell stories about how shitty we are. And these people cannot believe I love this show, and it's fun. I love this show, and it's a guilty pleasure for me.
10 episode of Hacks on HBO Max. I need to check it out. I saw the trailer and I was drawn in.
Shooter McGavin, Michael O'Connell, is that his name? Michael O'Donnell. Yeah,
he's in that, right?
I almost texted
Christopher
you.
Christopher
McDonald. Michael O'Donnell. Sorry.
That was close. Honestly, I only know that because I had the Wikipedia pulled up for the show.
He
I
would is never a good actor. That. This is the first time I've actually seen him on screen, and I've been like, "Oh, there's him doing Shooter McGavin type stuff again." Like, no,
how old is Christopher McDonald? Just guess.
67.
Wow, 66.
I'm good at guessing old people. I should be like a carnival barker.
I just thought he was older, and 66 isn't young.
It's my parents' age.
I don't know why I thought. Anyways,
66 isn't young, as my dad throws his phone at us right now.
I don't know. I just thought he was going to be like, I don't know. We also both discovered that Clint Eastwood is 91. And wow. Holy moly. All right. Guilty pleasure. Beep, boop, boop, real quick. It's no secret that I love a good multi-level marketing company. I love being pitched, your insert weight loss products. Hey, Tony, haven't talked to you in a while. How are things? I don't know, random person from high school or college. What are you going to try and sell me that's only $19.99? Anyways, that happens a lot when you're overweight. I love it. LuLaRoe was a company, I think it is still a company, that sells like high-end women's clothing, but you have to buy it and then you become a distributor and then you have a downline and then you have to buy all this crap. Anyways, LuLaRoe is on Amazon Prime. It's phenomenal. It opens up with the founders of this company. They both have crazy eyes. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's 4 episodes. Admittedly, I've only started episode 2, but it's great, but it's also very sad because a lot of people have lost a lot of money and they've been manipulated like most of these MLM companies do, where they force you to have unbelievable amounts of inventory so that you can achieve these goals and go on these cruises and go. I listen to MLM podcasts or anti-MLM podcasts.
Like the DeVos family. Oh, isn't that how they, aren't they like Amway?
Are Amway. Yeah. I have, I don't know if they would ever listen to this, but there's people that I know.
The former director of the Department of Education. Yeah, I don't think she listens to our podcast.
No, but people I knew in college that are in that business. And I did get the, hey, Tony, you know what I think you'd be good at? Because you seem like you have some extra time. And I was like, what? No, I'm not. What? No, I'm not selling this crap. Like, get out of here. Startup kit, $99. Anyways, hashtag boss babes and boss dudes. Check out LuLaRoe if you dare. We're going to go into the buffer confessionals. And as I say this, I feel like I'm going to jinx myself. It's going to get a little scary. Scary. My confession, we're getting closer to Halloween, and
did you like my movies. Halloween costume idea I sent you?
Yes.
Is it happening?
I don't know. I turned down hosting a Halloween party this year, which is fine. We've been invited to one that is very small and safe, and everybody would be vaxxed and ready to have a party. The idea you sent me is great. There's this local Italian restaurant, shout out Salvatelli's. They have this Italian like chef statue on wheels and he just looks awesome. And he has a whimsical mustache, and Joel sent me a picture of it, and I think I could pull it off. All right, I'm going to go with Rosemary's Baby. Here's why. Hear me out as the horror fans are unsubscribing fast and furiously. I was looking at like a list of the top 200 greatest horror scary movies of all time. And I thought, man, I've seen a lot of these. And then, of course, there's just some I've never heard of. And as I started to crack the top like 40, I came upon Rosemary's Baby. And I thought, that's one of those movies. And not that it comes up often. It certainly doesn't. But I have lied my way through having seen Rosemary's Baby, the original 1968, number 25 on the list of Rotten Tomatoes all-time scary movies. I ain't seen Rosemary's Baby. And I don't know if I will. Mia Farrow, John Cassavetes, Ruth Gordon, directed by, wait for it, he can't come back to the country, Roman Polanski.
Say Roman Polanski. We watched it in film class in college.
Haven't seen it.
I don't think I would have seen it. I don't think I will. I would have ever seen it if we hadn't had to watch it in a film class in college. Shout out Mark Moody. There's no reason to see it. I mean, it's well made. Polanski's a brilliant director. But
how about the fact that Rotten Tomatoes gives Jordan Peele not one but two movies in the top four? With Get Out at number two and Us at number four on the top 200 horror scary movies of all time. Good for
him. Candyman, not going to make that list, I don't think.
No, still haven't seen it, but I need to. What are you confessing, sir? What do you got?
I am going to confess. You mentioned The Many Saints of Newark earlier.
Yes.
And this is a gray area confession. Forgive me, Father, for I have tried. I have tried to watch The Sopranos. And
What episode are you hung up on?
I just finished the first season.
Okay.
And I'm going to power through, but God bless America, that mother of his is so damn punchable. Like, I don't like her.
Nancy Marchand's so good, though.
And I think that maybe, and I loved how you and Mike Breitenstein were on that text thread. And he's like, just power through. She dies. Or maybe that was you. Like, you're like, the actress dies, so she doesn't stick around long. So rest in peace, whatever her name is. But it's like, you are Italian from a major city. You know people like that. I am German from super small town in Iowa, relatively speaking. I didn't know connected people. And the only Italians I knew were just like people who had no, there was no Little Italy in any town I've ever lived in, you know, whatsoever. So some of it almost seems to be over the top stereotype. Like some of these goons that are in, you know, the Soprano crew, I find that whole archetype to be a little annoying personally. But I think if I had grown up with, you know, some of these characters in my neighborhood, I would find it a little bit less, you know, uncomfortable, a little less fake. Sometimes it comes off fake to me, and I have known enough people to say that it is not that far off from what it is. But I've never lived it, never experienced it, even in my times in New York and Chicago, in some of these areas, I've just not experienced it. So it seems a little over the top for me.
Yeah. Let me just say what The Sopranos does really well as after season one, when a new season starts, is the first couple of minutes of new season, there's a little bit of catching up. They're just always really well done. And you'll have that with episode one, season two, guy walks into a psychiatrist's office. Now, season two, I would say, picks up the pace a little bit. You get a couple new characters. You get Richie Aprile. Okay. Richie Aprile, the character, unbelievable, unbelievable Richie Aprile. And what happens with that arc, David Proval, the actor. So I would say,
I'm going to try to power through, because I do want to see the new, The Many Saints of Newark. And I think I have to have more context for that.
So here's the thing about that. What I've heard about Many Saints of Newark releasing next week, it stands alone, and it's almost as if now they're they are connected to this web, but the one review was like, this is like its own movie. And then they're like, hey, there's Tony Soprano as a kid, you know? So,
which is fine. I think that's a smart way to do it. Okay.
But what I'm going to say is, if you get through episode one, Gandolfini's
son doing it, right?
And yes,
many say,
which I've heard he's only in it like the back half, like the first half, it's literally a kid playing Gandolfini, Tony Soprano. Season two, give it a little bit. I think you'll,
well, I will.
It gets into a pretty good groove. And then there's a hell of an ending to season two. All right. We're going to get out of here. Dress Socks and Crocs, parenting and life, wins and losses and funny moments in between. Ladies and gentlemen.
Dress Socks and Crocs.
All right. So where we're at in the great state of Iowa, fall is happening. We're losing daylight. It's really tough. It's really tough. And, you know, it's getting a little cooler. And I just want to ask, where do all the coats go? Like, where are our kids' coats? We moved in May. We have a mud room. Hashtag basic. There's shoes. There's a bench. There's hooks for backpacks. There were kids' coats the other day. And there are no kids' coats. I don't know where they went. They're not in my van. I was going to say they might be. I just cleaned out my van, which if you have a minivan and young kids, cleaning it out is the stupidest thing you could do. You're just like jinxing yourself.
It's just depressing. It's like, why didn't I do this sooner? Yeah. But why am I doing it? Because it's just going to get messy.
I shop backed it in my garage yesterday. I don't know where their coats are. And then it becomes a thing in the mornings here when you're getting out the door to school and you know it's going to be a little cool and it's going to warm up. And then you get out and they're like, what are you sending me to school with no coat? And they look at you like,
you're the worst.
I'm going to turn ever. You into DCFS, man. I don't know where the coats are.
And you work for the school district too. So it's like, yeah, the teachers, know. You have to see your kids' teachers.
I'm half inclined to just say like, go to the lost and found and grab a coat and just take it because it's probably yours. And if it fits, like the lost and found at their school has a lot of stuff in it. And I don't know if there's stuff's in there because I'm a bad dad and I don't remember what their coats look like, but they're just gone. So
it's so funny you said that because this morning, my youngest has been under the weather this week, but you know, COVID negative, all that stuff, all the fun testing that we have to do to get our kids back in school. And so my mom came over because he was only going to go half a day. So he missed the first half of the morning, just making sure that his cough had cleared up. Just the morning grog. So as I'm leaving, as my mom comes in, I open the closet to get his coat out and it's not there. And we don't know where it is. And it was just so funny you said that because I have had a similar story today. It's true. But now as I sit here in my basement podcast studio / storage room, I'm looking at a coat rack and I see his coat hanging
right here. That's so great. That's the best.
Because you know what it was? And I'll say this because I love my wife very much, but she doesn't listen to the podcast. I don't know about your spouse, but my spouse organizes herself to the point of disorganization. It's we're going to declutter for the sake of decluttering, but we end up putting it someplace where we have no flippin' clue where we put it.
Amen.
And it's not the greatest situation, but I will give my wife a ton of credit that before our children are permitted to turn on the TV at night and go to bed and then get ready for bed, they have to have their shoes, their backpacks packed, and everything lined up at the door with their coat that they're going to wear the next day, or the sweatshirt or like a cardigan. My kids wear the zip-up cardigans a lot to school because it's can go indoor, outdoor. That is
super smart. It's 10:26 p.m. Central. I don't think their lunches are packed.
Well, see, we just do the school lunch, man. We're school lunchers.
I can't. I trust me, it drives me crazy that our kids all have in Iowa free lunch, and maybe it's across the country. And my wife works at 7 a.m., so it's going to be they're just going to get hot dog water and onions. It's going to be like an Uncle Buck lunch.
Well, and
like
my wife's the second grade teacher at my kid's school. So they're on her schedule. So they go with her. So I'm lucky, but that's not my dress socks and Crocs moment. Mine's more a little bit uplifting and less funny, but I think I sent you this book. I read the book over the weekend. I listened to it on Audible. It took me a day and a half. I powered through it. I couldn't put it down. And it's called The Matheny Manifesto. And it was written by Mike Matheny, the former manager of the St. Louis Cardinals. It has completely transformed, and it kind of fits into Ted Lasso a little bit. It's completely transformed how I am going to be a youth sports coach and a youth parent, a parent of youth and activities. Like, holy smokes. It might not be the book that we all want to read, but it's the book that we all need to read as parents. So can't stress that enough. Like, it's life affirming in some aspects, but life changing and altering. I know those are synonyms in other ways. Like, it's been a long time since I've read a book that changed me. This is it. This is one. So,
yeah, it might. Even as a Cubs fan, it's hard to knock them. But and listening to books is a beautiful thing, isn't it? It's like,
oh my gosh!
Because at first you're like, am I gonna? Because I did that with a couple of books, and I was like, am I listening? Am I actually listening? And then I'm like, oh yeah, this is
like in the last 3 months. I'm retaining all this. Last 3 months, I've pounded out Gladwell's David and Goliath, Gladwell's 10,000 Hours, this Mike Matheny book, Hate Inc., which is a really interesting book. There's just so cool. It's just being the busy person I am, I don't have time to sit down and read. But the fact that I can pop it in on my phone and listen to it in my car, yeah. So I know we're all tired. We got to go. I got to edit this thing and get it up. But
it's a beautiful thing, that Audible. Please sponsor us. All right. Well, to recap, Ted Lasso, your winner of the week, season 2 of Ted Lasso on Apple Plus, took on Only Murderers in the Building, season 1, Hulu. New episodes for the next 4 Mondays, 10 in total. Check it out. The Buffer podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts, anchor.fm. Please rate, review, subscribe, share with your friends, and more fun to come, more special guests
big,
to come.
Yeah, big guest, October 8th.
So stay tuned for that, and we appreciate y'all listening. You can't go wrong with Ted Lasso, that's for sure. Great mustache. How many Ted Lasso costumes this year for Halloween, by the way?
Going to be a lot. Going to be a lot. Yeah,
you'll probably win, too, if you show up like that. All right, we're going to get out of here, and we will see y'all next week right here. Who you got, here.
Badgers or Irish this weekend?
That's a tough call. They playing each other?
Yeah, at Soldier Sports. Field. At Soldier Field. At
Soldier Field. Oh, what I have is a drunk crowd.
Lots of
that's who's going to win.
Lots of them.
Oh, my gosh. Beer sales are the winner of that game, everybody.
We need to get a casino to sponsor a sports betting segment.
Yeah. We could. Maybe Riverside. Shout out to Damon John, everybody.
Does he still work there?
I don't know. He's alive. Yeah. All right, we're out. Bye. See ya.